Away.
Thank you, Maria, and good morning, everyone. Welcome to today's cyber seminar. This is Dr. Robin Mashup from VA Connecticut, and I will be hosting our monthly pain call entitled Spotlight on Pain Management. Spotlight on Pain Management is a collaboration of VA Connecticut, the VA National Program for Pain Management, the NIH VA DoD Pain Management Collaboratory, and the Health Systems Research Center for Information Dissemination and Education Resources, or CIDR. Today's seminar is entitled Implementation of New Physical Therapy Programs for Knee Osteoarthritis in the VA. I'm very delighted to introduce our presenter for today, Dr. Kelly Allen. She is a health services researcher and exercise physiologist whose research focuses on improving care and outcomes for patients with osteoarthritis and other chronic pain conditions. She serves as the Associate Director of the Durham Center of Innovation to Accelerate Discovery and Practice Transformation, or ADAPT, and is Professor of Medicine at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Dr. Allen's team conducts pragmatic and implementation trials focused on behavioral and health services interventions that are incorporated into real-world clinical settings. Our presenter will be speaking for approximately 45 minutes and will be taking your questions at the end of the talk. Please feel free to use the Q&A panel on your screen. Immediately following today's session, you will receive a very brief feedback form. We appreciate you completing this as it's critically important to help us provide you with great programming. I'm also delighted to introduce Dr. Bob Kearns, who is one of the directors of the NIH DoD VA Pain Management Collaboratory Coordinating Center and senior research scientist and professor emeritus at the Yale School of Medicine. He will be on our call today and be able to take questions that are related to the Pain Management Collaboratory and related to policy. And with that, I'm going to turn this presentation over to Dr. Allen.
All right. Thank you, Robin. Glad to be with you all today. Thanks for attending. I have been privileged over the past several years or more to really work on some projects that are getting at implementation of physical therapy programs. As Robin mentioned, our team is really trying to do work that is being rolled out in the VA and other health systems. A couple of the projects we've worked on, one is a stepped exercise program for knee osteoarthritis. Another one that I've been privileged to work on as a co-investigator is AIMBAC, which is part of the PMC3. And it is focused on a couple different options for delivering non-pharmacological care for back pain, one of which is a physical therapy-oriented pain pathway. But I'm going to focus today just in the interest of time and wanting to make sure we have opportunity for Q&A at the end. I'm going to focus on one program, a group physical therapy program for knee osteoarthritis that we've been working on. And I thought what I would do is take you all on kind of the journey we've been on, randomized clinical trial through a more of an implementation phase. So that's what I'm going to do today, but I'm glad to talk about those other programs during the Q&A period as well. Let me start by just telling you why we are interested in osteoarthritis in particular. There's a recent study that used data from the Million Veteran Program that showed that about 1 in 4 veterans is impacted by knee osteoarthritis specifically. So that's very high prevalence. And veterans tend to get knee osteoarthritis earlier, largely due to higher prevalence of joint injuries, some of which are military related. So often they're trying to deal with knee osteoarthritis in the context of being in the workforce and raising kids and those sorts of things. And veterans do tend to get more severe osteoarthritis, more pain, which is a particular relevance to this group than non-veterans. So really important condition for veterans. And the reason we're interested in physical therapy in this context is that it is one really good tool for mitigating some of the impacts. So as I'm showing here, knee osteoarthritis, one of the most common causes of chronic pain, also a common reason for functional decline. And those things in turn can lead to a lot of other negative health outcomes downstream, that we're particularly interested in, right? For veterans, cardiovascular events, falls, disability, work limitations, and even mortality. So as I mentioned, physical therapy is one tool we have to disrupt that pathway. But there's a challenge in some scenarios related to demand for physical therapy services. The figure I'm showing on the left-hand side of the slide is from the American Physical Therapy Association, just modeling in the U.S. the supply versus demand of physical therapists. Demand in the top row in green and supply in the bottom row in red. And you can see there's a gap that's narrowing, so that's encouraging. But there still is a gap nationwide. And for those of us that live in more urban areas, this may seem surprising, at least it does to me, because if I need a physical therapy appointment, it's pretty easy for me to get that. And I probably don't have to wait very long. But that's not the experience of some people, particularly in more rural areas, more medically underserved areas in general. It can be a challenge and there can be wait times. And we also know that in the VA, because of the many health conditions that affect veterans, that for which physical therapy is a treatment component, demand is high, which can lead to wait times. Right now, I think they're around, it's close to a month, which is maybe not as long as for some services, but more than we'd like. And in fiscal year 23, the VA spent about $260 million on community care for PT. So all of these things has led our team to be thinking about efficient models for delivering physical therapy for knee osteoarthritis. And one of them is a group physical therapy program that we've been working on. Now, as you know, physical therapy is traditionally delivered at a one-on-one individual basis. For some programs, for some health conditions, that's really the only way to do it. There's a lot of sort of hands-on manipulation, those sorts of things. For knee osteoarthritis, there are some modalities that can be incorporated, but for the core evidence-based component of PT for knee OA is instruction and support for an appropriate home exercise program. And we can do that in a group and still incorporate those other things as well. So a number of years ago, our team started off with a clinical trial where we randomized 320 veterans with knee osteoarthritis to receive individual versus group physical therapy. In that study, we operationalized individual physical therapy as a minimum of 2 1-hour visits with the physical therapist, 2 to 3 weeks apart, but they could receive more at the discretion of the PT and the patient. And that was operationalized based on how things were at our study site at that time. Group physical therapy program was 6 1-hour visits over 12 weeks. And we had 8 patients per group. It was co-led by a physical therapist and a physical therapy assistant. And it consisted of group education and exercise, emphasis on the exercise. And then we did incorporate some individual evaluations or consultations with the physical therapist. So they would, similar to what you see in the other kind of shared medical visits, they would pull a patient aside and just do a brief kind of one-on-one, look for things like whether they might be a good candidate for a knee brace or needed some shoe orthotics or those sorts of things. We really tried to make the study pragmatic so that it had an opportunity, hopefully, to be implemented in the VA afterwards. Our exclusion criteria for patients were really limited to things related to safety. And we embedded it in the VA PT service. So our Durham VA PTs were the ones delivering the program. And as I mentioned, this was a model that emphasized efficiency because we thought that was very pragmatic and something that the VA might be interested in if it was effective. So this slide shows the results for our main outcome for the trial, which is it's called the WOMAC, which is a measure, self-reported measure of pain, stiffness, and function. And lower scores are better. So in here on this slide, what you're seeing is that you see the group in blue and the individual PT in red. You can see both going down or improving, which was a clinically meaningful improvement, and 12 weeks was our primary outcome assessment point. You can see that the group arm did a little better. They improved a little more, but it wasn't to a clinically meaningful or statistically significant degree. So what we find in this study was not that group physical therapy was better, but that it was as good as. We actually did have some secondary outcomes for which the group arm was a little better. But what this showed us is that this is a viable alternative model, we think, to the individual approach, and it increases access. So just one kind of playing that out a little bit, one scenario, if you're treating 8 patients with knee OA and you take the traditional individual approach and you do 6 visits, that's 48 clinician hours. If you deliver it in a group, it's 6 clinician hours. So that's assuming you have one clinician delivering the program. As I mentioned, for our trial, we had a PT and a PT assistant. So it changes things a little bit depending on how many clinicians are involved, how many patients per group, and so on. But in any case, it does save, it saves clinician hours and expands access. So based on results for the trial, the Durham VA liked it, and they picked it up as a clinical program after we were done with the trial. And we had an opportunity with some funds from QERI, or the VA Quality Enhancement Research Initiative, to evaluate for the Durham VA how their program was going. And this was a first round of funding for our QERI program. We call it Function QERI. Longer title is Optimizing Function and Independence QERI. And we've been focusing on 3 clinical programs, one of which is Group PT. And then we also have 2 others, STRIDE and Caregivers First. So I'm not gonna talk about those today, but I wanted to give that, put that in the, what we're doing with Group PT in the broader context. So with our first round of QERI funding, we were actually required to have a local kind of quality improvement project. So that aligned really well with being able to partner with the Durham VA PT service and look at what they were doing. So I'm presenting here data from a subset of patients that they enrolled during part of a year. And they were collecting these outcomes. We didn't collect the outcomes, they were collecting them. We did the analyses for them. And what we see basically here is that outcomes were improving. We saw similar magnitude of improvements in that clinical program as we did for the trial, which is really encouraging, right? Because often we are concerned that in a clinical trial, we can keep the intervention and other things pretty tightly controlled. But then when things go, you know, they're rolled out in clinical practice, maybe it looks a little bit different, all kinds of things can happen. Is it still effective? And here we see, yeah, so 30-second chair rises, we see an improvement of about 2, which is a good improvement, especially over a period of just 12 weeks. We see pain intensity decreasing from about a 6.5 to about a 5.5 on the 10-point numeric rating scale. And then we see the WOMAC, same outcome I showed you before, changing by about 10 points, going about from about a 57 to a 47, which is clinically relevant. So all really encouraging. This is some other data from that same project, just showing where the referrals came from, to emphasize that this is a program that's delivered by physical therapy, but the referrals to it come largely from outside of physical therapy. And that's going to be a theme here as I continue to talk about just the challenge it is really to get referrals. So here, just a quick note that most of the referrals came from ambulatory care, 15% from surgical service, which I think is probably all ortho, and then 9% came from within PM&R. So likely what's going on there is that physical therapists would see somebody for an evaluation and then decide to move them into a group PT as kind of the plan of care after that. So things went well in the Durham VA program in terms of patient outcomes, but there were some challenges that we learned about. One, as I mentioned, was referral volume. They would have liked to seen even more referrals. And we really learned that when trying to sort of market a program, it really takes a good bit of work to help providers understand what the program is, who's appropriate for it, what are the benefits, and for veterans too. And veterans are used to hearing about and receiving physical therapy on one-on-one. And so there can be concerns. Is this as good? Is this going to help me? Is it the right program for me? So helping to do that marketing and education is really important for referrals. At the Durham program, there were occasionally some inappropriate referrals, getting sort of acute knee pain that wasn't OA. Of course, some veterans didn't want to participate because they didn't want to drive to the VA for the 6 classes. And I'll talk about later some efforts in our current project to deliver it over telehealth. And then, of course, there are challenges with no-shows, as there is with any clinical program or service. So that round of function query ended, and we were fortunate to get a second round of function query of query funds for our program that we're kind of at the tail end of right now. And for group PT, we really took a big leap from that small quality improvement program to doing a multi-site implementation trial. And I have here 16 plus sites. 16 was our minimum goal, and we ended up with more, as you'll see in a little bit. This is a hybrid type 3 study. And by that, I mean that we are still evaluating the patient outcomes. We are wanting to make sure that we're still seeing good improvements in terms of pain and function, but our primary outcomes are actually implementation outcomes. And we are asking questions about the best way to implement, help sites to start up and roll out the group physical therapy program. In particular, for our function query projects, we're trying to understand how to best tailor the intensification of, or tailor the intensity of implementation support for sites. So we know that when you are trying to help sites implement any clinical program, some sites, it's an easy path. They're able to get started up, keep going. Some sites, not so much, and that can be for a number of reasons. The thought is that an efficient approach is that we start everybody with some kind of basic levels of support and then see how they're doing. And then for sites that need more support, they get more support. So our research question for group PT and for function query in general has really been, what's the comparison if we just keep that the same level of implementation support throughout versus scale up the implementation support or add on implementation support for sites that aren't doing well? Okay, so that's our general question. And this is showing particularly how we're doing that in the context of group PT. So starts 0 months is our launch point. That's when sites get all the materials they need to start up their own group physical therapy program. And that foundational support goes for 6 months. In a few slides, I'm going to tell you a lot more about what is going on with that foundational support. But then we look at 6 months and we see how sites are doing. Our benchmark for group PT was that we wanted to see them deliver at least one group PT session and have at least 5 patients. That was not a magical number. We just kind of thought, what would be a good indicator that, yeah, they're getting patients in, they've got a good start. 6 months is a decent time, right? But we knew that it was going to take sites a while to do things like clear places in the schedule, clear physical therapists to do the program, do training, do that marketing, get their CPRS notes in. So that was our hope, was that sites would be able to launch within about 6 months. Okay, so then you see the two lines, you see foundational support, and then you see potential for enhanced support. That is the point at which implementation support could differ. For sites that are randomized to the enhanced support arm, if they didn't meet that benchmark at 6 months, then they started getting enhanced support. And I'll tell you in a little bit what that looked like. The other sites that were randomized to foundational support, no matter what they were doing with that, their benchmarks, they just kept getting the foundational support for the full 12-month implementation period. We also looked at how sites were doing at 9 months, because we were wondering about sustainment. And so we set a benchmark that for sites that were in that enhanced support arm, if they hadn't enrolled at least 15 new patients between 6 and 9 months, then they would start to get enhanced support at that point. Okay, so sites could, in that arm in the bottom row, sites could get and start getting enhanced support at either 6 or 9 months. So that's our overall study design. Let me tell you a little bit more. Did I skip a slide? I skipped some slides there. Hold on, let me go back. I'm not sure what happened there. Okay, I accidentally advanced several slides. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about what the group PT program is like and then what our implementation strategies look like. So for VA facilities that participated in our trial, we had pretty minimal criteria. They, of course, needed to have an outpatient physical therapy service. If they were delivering the program in person, they needed to have a space, a gym to have it in. Not a requirement if they were delivering virtually or via telehealth. And we ask that they have 2 staff members to deliver the program, 1 primary and 1 backup. They could have more, but we wanted to make sure that they had coverage for their program. And importantly, it could be delivered by a physical therapist, kinesiotherapist, physical therapy assistant, KT assistant. So it was really a kind of a flexible model. Patients had to have a diagnosis of knee osteoarthritis. So we didn't require that they have brand new imaging, but they had to have a clinician diagnosis. We wanted to make sure they weren't at risk for falls. And then we didn't want them to have co-occurring health conditions that made participation in home exercise unsafe. So really criteria that you would typically use in terms of physical therapy for knee osteoarthritis. Nothing particularly special here about our study. This is the overview of what the physical therapy group or the group PT program looks like when veterans come in. The first 10 minutes is kind of settling in and completing some functional tests and surveys. So we wanted to keep this minimal, but we did want to keep our eye, as I mentioned, on those effectiveness outcomes. We had a couple of surveys. So I'll show you those in the results a little bit later. And a functional test, which was that 30-second chair stand test. So they would come in, do those things, record their data, either on an iPad or in person, I'm sorry, or on paper. Sites that were doing that virtually had different ways they were doing that and collecting that data. Next, they would do a warm-up time, and we encouraged sites that during that time, it'd be a good opportunity for veterans to share their success stories. How they've been doing with their home exercise since they were there last. And then 30 minutes was devoted to strengthening exercises. I'll show you more detail of that on the next slide. And then the last 10 minutes were stretching and educational topics. So we had a prepackaged set of 6 educational modules. I'll show you those in a minute as well, that whoever is delivering the program could go through with the veterans. Okay. So this is how the strengthening exercises went. We had them do that in 2 circuits. So we developed exercises for 5 lower body, primarily lower body muscle groups: quadriceps, hip abductors, hamstrings, calves, and step ups. Okay. So what we had veterans do was do your quadriceps exercises for 2 minutes, rest, hip abductors, and so on. And then going through that circuit twice takes a half an hour. A little bit more about the exercises. So we work with physical therapists to develop these, what we call challenge levels for each of those groups. So on the left here, you see the kind of muscle groups on the top are challenge levels. So these are increasing in order of difficulty. Important component of physical therapy is really trying to get people to progress, to have enough of a stimulus that they're seeing some changes in muscle strength, et cetera. So we would have veterans go through these, and I'll show you in a minute the criteria we had for when they would move up to the next level. And you can see at the bottom, we also had some warm-up exercises and cool-down exercises. Sites could vary those, though, of course. We had a lot of resources for patients. This is just a couple of little photos from a pretty detailed handbook that we gave to patients. They had access to all of the exercises in that handbook that they could, so they had instructions on how to do that at home. They also had videos that we have on a YouTube channel. They could use them there. And this is also from our patient handbook, and this describes a little bit about how we instructed them to progress their exercises. We gave them the RPE, or rating or perceived exertion chart, and we told them that if their RPE was less than 5, which is hard, and if their pain was less than 10, then they can progress. It was a good time to progress to the next exercise. That's a general rule. And of course, the physical therapists or PT assistants or kinesiotherapists were there to help them understand when it made sense to progress into different exercises. This is just a little bit more about the patient education modules. We talked to them just, you know, first session generally, what's just orienting them more to the group PT sessions. Why are we doing things the way we're doing them? We gave them a good bit of information on general principles of appropriate exercise for knee osteoarthritis, some tips for success with exercise in general, different strategies for protecting and supporting joints, which included things like knee braces, and they can get referrals for those if needed. And then managing osteoarthritis pain, we had a couple modules on that. We talked about things like activity pacing. We did weave in some things sort of related to cognitive behavioral therapy. And really talked about how to use those kinds of skills to manage pain during or after exercise. So we did have core aspects of the program. We wanted to have some level of standardization of like, what is this group PT program? And that's really that it's a 6-session exercise program. And you saw the kind of exercise we were recommending. But we wanted sites to have flexibility in terms of how they delivered the program to fit their own context and workflows. And so they could have, one of the ways they could adapt things was delivery mode. As I mentioned, it could be in person or virtual or hybrid. We didn't have anybody who did the hybrid model, but we did have the other two. Sites could choose the frequency of their classes and the class size, although we encouraged sites not to enroll more than 10 people in a class, just because it gets difficult to monitor people and doing exercise appropriately. Sites could choose to enroll people as they came in, or they could choose to start patients like we did in our trial in kind of a cohort of 8 or 10 or whatever patients. They could do evaluations. So just kind of in terms of scope of practice, patients have to have a PT evaluation before they begin a plan of care, including group physical therapy. So sites could use this after a full evaluation by a physical therapist, or they could have a veteran come in a little early before their group PT session and have an evaluation by a physical therapist to make sure the group PT program that they were about to do was appropriate. So sites could tailor this to, again, manage it best in their own workflow. And then I mentioned different ways of collecting patient-reported outcomes, including tablets and on paper. And some sites that were delivering virtually did that via Qualtrics. Okay. So let me talk now about our implementation support packages. So this is showing you our foundational support package, which we modeled after something called Replicating Effective Programs, or REP. We have a very extensive implementation toolkit. It's 50 pages or more with a lot of appendices. It is designed to help sites to be able to have a resource that tells them exactly how they can start up and sustain their group PT program. We have patient resources I mentioned a little bit ago. We gave sites CPRS note templates customized for the group PT sessions. We gave sites data reports. Once they started up their program, we gave them a report monthly that gave them some feedback to say, you know, here's how many patients you've had in, here's how many sites, how this is the class sizes, and things like patient satisfaction. So sites were getting a little bit of feedback on their program over time. We have some webinars that were a little bit like the implementation toolkit, but they were just a different way to digest it, right? They could watch these to get information about core parts of starting up a program. We had all this on SharePoint. We also had an MS Teams channel where other sites, all the sites that were delivering programs could get on and share with each other. And really a core part of our foundational support were monthly office hours, which we did in cohorts. You'll see in a minute that we enrolled sites in the trial in 3 different cohorts, really to give some cohesion to those groups and to be able to manage the office hours a little bit better. So we would get on these monthly. We had, for each session, we had kind of a packaged short presentation that dealt with something, some aspect of delivering group physical therapy, and really use the rest of the time for sites to share how they were doing and for us and for other sites to give each other tips and support. Okay, so that's the foundational support, which I'm showing here again in summary in the kind of orange bubble in the middle. And then we had our enhanced support for some sites, and that was really tailored site-specific guidance, what you can think of as external facilitation. And it was up to 6 hours of individual coaching, either starting at 6 months or potentially starting at 9 months. So that was really a time of digging deep with each site to try to understand maybe what were their challenges were and how, what plans they could be implementing to roll out the program a little bit better. Okay, so we ended up enrolling 19 sites, and you can see those here. We enrolled them in 3 cohorts. And I'm going to just now talk you through some of our results from the trial, starting with characteristics of our 19 sites. We were pleased to see that there was a good balance in site characteristics for foundational enhanced support arms. So I'm going to focus on the total column here. We had 11 sites that were high complexity and 8 that were medium or low complexity. So a good range of VAs in terms of size and into the complexity of services delivered. Decent range in terms of geography. So we had on the map, we had a little bit more more sites in the south. And then we wanted to pay attention to rural status of sites. And so we actually set it a goal to enroll at least 4 sites that were classified as highly rural. And the way we operationalized that was sites for whom at least 50% of the patients they served were classified as being rural. So we ended up with 4 high rural sites, 15, we call it low, but actually a good number of those sites still had a fairly high proportion of rural veterans. So those are the sites. I think I accidentally skipped, for some reason my cursor is skipping over. Okay, so these are veteran characteristics. Again, we had good balance between foundational enhanced support, so we'll just look at the total column. As you expect in the VA, majority were men, about 90%, 67% white, 16% black. Not great representation, or not very high representation for other racial groups, and some missing data. These are all data from the EHR, by the way. 14% were Hispanic, Latino, or Spanish origin, 80% were not, and the mean age was around 67. Okay, wow, it's continuing to skip. I think I need to use a different way of going between slides. Okay, so a little bit about how things went with our group PT program. 63% of sites delivered it in person, 38% via telehealth. And I think we were really glad to see a fair proportion of sites trying that telehealth option, because it is so great about expanding access for veterans. 63% enrolled veterans in cohorts. 30% used rolling admission. The mean number of office hours attended was 6.5, and that's again out of a possible 12, or so 1 per month. And you can see it was a good range, 1 to 11. Some sites not able to participate much at all, some in the majority. This was definitely a challenge for some sites. These are busy physical therapy services. And so some just had a challenge, even though we delivered the calls over lunchtime, some sites just really had a challenge in being able to make those office hour calls. All of our enhanced support sites ended up receiving additional support at either 6 or 9 months, right? So either they did not meet the adoption benchmark at 6 months, or they did, and then they didn't meet the sustainment benchmark. And then the last part of this slide, I'm showing you the mean number of those enhanced support or external facilitation calls. For those sites that started receiving enhanced support at 6 months, the mean number of calls was 5.5, so about once a month, which is pretty good. And then of those that started at 9 months, it was also about one, averaging 1 per month, about 3 calls. Wow, still skipping. Sorry about this. I think I need to click through rather than using my cursor. Okay. So this slide, let me walk you through it. This is showing basically when sites launched their program by month. And if you're the black lines are the low touch or the foundational support sites. The blue lines are our high touch or our enhanced support sites. If you see a diamond, it means that that site did meet that adoption benchmark. So deliver a class of at least 5 patients and enroll at least 5 patients at some point in the 12-month implementation period. If you see a circle, that means that the site, although they launched the program, they never met that adoption benchmark. It's probably hard for you to count these lines, but there are 16 rather than 19. One of our sites dropped out of the study very early on. Another site did not launch a program, and a third launched, but it was after this 12-month time period. So one overall message here is that adoption, which was one of our outcomes, was pretty good, that the majority of sites did successfully get a group PT program during the 12-month implementation period, okay? And just one other take-home message from this slide is that there's a big range. Some sites adopted fairly early as 3 months. So they were up and running. They had their CPRS notes, they were in, they had enrolled at least 3, I'm sorry, at least 5 patients within 3 months. Some taking longer. Okay, here we go. These are our implementation outcomes, which are our primary outcomes for the trial. And the data I'm showing you here are just from months 7 to 12, because that's the time point at which the implementation support could differ between the foundational enhanced support arms. Our primary outcome was penetration or reach, defined as the average number of patients enrolled monthly. And so for foundational support, it was 1.16 per month. For enhanced support, it was 0.95 per month. So no real difference here. And on the low side, if we look at a little bit of a different metric for that, so the total enrolled in group PT over that 7 to 12 month period, it was about 6.5 for foundational support and then 5.5 for enhanced support. We also were interested in looking at fidelity, which we define as the average number of sessions enrolled by attended by enrolled patients. And that was about 4 for foundational support and about 5 for enhanced support, which is good out of 6 classes. And that's if you cap it at 6 classes. Some sites did let patients go more to more than 6 classes, and you can see, so that's a little bit of a higher number there. These data are the same. It's the same table, but I'm showing you now the whole implementation period, 0 to 12 months. So if you look at the top row, the average monthly enrollment goes down, and that's of course because we're including some of those early months where a lot of sites hadn't launched yet. If you look at the second row, what you see is that foundational support arm enrolled about 11 over the period, at the time period, but a big range, right? Some sites enrolling up 20 or more. And then enhanced support, a little bit lower. The average, it was 9 with a confidence interval of 5 to about 16. And then the fidelity numbers are really very similar in looking at the full implementation period. Okay, so here are patient outcomes, and here I'm again showing you just from 7 to 12 months. And we collected PROMIS pain interference, PROMIS physical function, and then the 30-second chair stands. Let me focus on the change scores. So for PROMIS pain interference, we want this to go down, and we see it going down, so this is good. It's very similar for foundational and enhanced support, about a 2.5-point change, which is really kind of on the border of clinically relevant improvement in the context of knee osteoarthritis. PROMIS physical function, we want to go up. It's going up. This is good. It didn't improve as much as pain interference did, interestingly. And that probably would not be in the clinically relevant improvement range. But we did see a meaningful improvement in the number of chair rises. So going up about 2 in 30 seconds for both foundational and enhanced support. Patient satisfaction was very high, about a 9 out of 10 for both arms. And then we asked patients to describe how is their ability to deal with daily knee problems compared to before they started the group PT program. And 60% of those in both arms said that they were doing better in that regard. We also administered a survey to some of the staff who were delivering group PT. And this is one item from it. We asked them what additional tools or resources would have helped your facility to more successfully implement group PT. And these are the top 3 that sites endorsed. One was provider buy-in, around 30%. And this, I think, means not necessarily the PT service buy-in, but buy-in from referring providers or those outside the PT service. Support from leadership was endorsed by 28% of respondents. And just a note here is that there certainly was some level of support for all sites because they had to have that as a requirement for being in the trial. But here a perception that additional support may have helped things even more. And then about 24% say that more patient awareness would be helpful. And that, again, that's probably related to the referral stream. So this is one area that is something we're paying attention to for future efforts. Just wanted to share some quotes from patients and clinicians we talked with in our qualitative interviews. One veteran said, "It's nice to have a group setting. Hour-long sessions felt more effective than a quick 30-minute PT session." Another veteran said, "It helped me get better. I've been keeping up with the home exercises, and it's made a difference in my ability to get up from a seated position compared to when I started." So those are encouraging things we like to hear. A couple more. A veteran said, "It was nice to be able to participate in class during my lunch break without needing to take time off work and drive to clinic." So that was somebody that was participating in the telehealth class. And then one of the staff said, our first group of veterans rated the class a perfect 10, completely satisfied. Decrease in pain and improved 30-second cheers to rise scores were noted. And that motivates us that we're headed in the right direction and serving our veteran population. So I want to end by talking about some of the challenges and what we think might be next steps. HR documentation, was challenging for some sites. We tried to make the CPRS note template as easy as possible, but it's just something to keep an eye on. Because when we're collecting data like this for implementation trials, they have to be in health factors, which means you can't copy notes. So that makes it a little bit cumbersome for sites who are used to doing that as a reasonable way to make the documentation more efficient. Of course, staffing changes can place program delivery at risk. We did see that at some sites. Penetration as reach, as I noted, was modest at some sites. It was very good at other sites. So we're really thinking about how do we support sites to enhance this. Sites did a good job overall of getting programs started, but as I've said a couple times, just the challenge of having a regular referral stream seems to be one that most sites need some help with. And then in addition to looking at reach, we're interested in understanding best strategies to support sustainment. So our implementation period was 12 months. And in some ways that seems like a long time, but when you consider that I think over half of sites didn't launch a program until 6 months, it's really not. It's not a long time to get a program to kind of get those wheels greased. I think particularly when implementing a group program like this, it just takes a while to get things rolling. And I think we're, even with our 12-month evaluation period, I think it's in early days to really see how well these sites are going to do in terms of continuing to get more veterans enrolled in the program. Last, I just want to mention that we were grateful to be selected as one of the finalist sites for Shark Tank for this year. So that's been a fun experience for us. We're kind of in the middle of that process, and we'll be talking about Group PT in Chicago towards the end of the month. I'm looking forward to that. And acknowledging our funding, and just wanted to say thank you to a whole bunch of people, and probably some people we've missed here. This is our study teams and our patient partners, our clinical partners. Some of the people listed on here are veterans who volunteered for our photo shoots. And then, of course, thanks to all of the clinical sites that have been willing partners to implement Group PT with us. And I will end there and open us up for Q&A.
Thank you, Dr. Allen. This is quite amazing and really exciting to see how this work has evolved through the different projects, looking at the effectiveness of this and now how you are working to implement this and to, you know, get the intervention to penetrate into the VA healthcare system. We do have a number of questions in the Q&A, which I will send some of them to you. Can you tell us, were there any differences? Did you have a chance to look at this between sites that conducted the groups via telehealth versus in person? Or do you have a sense?
To look at, like, comparing outcomes? We haven't done that yet. Is that the question? Is how do we look at differences between?
Well, I think both between the sites of telehealth and in person, and then the patient outcomes. So yeah, the implementation outcomes and the patient outcomes.
Yeah, good question. We definitely have not yet. The data I'm showing you, like, are from like last week or this week. We're just analyzing our primary outcomes. But I think that's an important question. And particularly with fidelity was pretty good overall in terms of number attended. But that's one thing we'll want to look at, is were there differences in either that or those patient outcomes between sites that deliver it in person and over telehealth. So we will look at it. We haven't looked at it yet.
Great. I don't know whether this is premature, given that you're still developing this work, but are the YouTube videos available to?
They are. I don't know what the best way to get that out, but we do have a link. It's a, I think we have it set up, so it's, I don't know that you can search necessarily and easily find it, but it is available. Maybe we can share the link. I don't know, but we can certainly send it out if anybody wants to email us.
We have a few questions related to the referrals and the referral process. And you know, what might have been you know, helping the referrals or getting in the way in terms of increased hourly RVUs or workload. Can you talk a little bit more in depth about that?
About referrals and RVUs and
Yes, and what this was like for the clinicians to have the extra workload to make the referrals.
Yeah, okay. So that's a good question. It's interesting because I don't usually think of the RVUs and referrals together, but so for the clinicians delivering, there's workload credit. We did talk a little bit about, so there's group and there's individual. So there are questions about RVUs for group versus individual. And we talked about those sort of nuances with our partners. And I see Bob put a comment here about Joel Skolton. So we work with Joel Skolton, Mark Havrin, who's the PT service lead, and Doug Bittelsbach about all those things. I will say sites did not have a big concern about RVUs in terms of delivering, how that would be in terms of delivering group, you know, delivering things in the group versus individual. Most sites are not delivering that many classes that it makes an appreciable difference there. And then referrals, as I said, most of the referrals tend to be from outside the physical therapy service, although they can manage it, so it's mostly internal. So it's like a plan of care after an individual evaluation. I think the biggest challenges with referrals are really getting referrals from outside the PT service.
Right.
The sites who were really, sites who wanted to participate with us were motivated, right? They wanted this to work. So I don't think they had a hesitation internally about referring to themselves or referring to group PT from within service. I think the bigger challenge is outside.
Here's also, you know, an interesting question. So you had presented the data about kind of the difference in the hours if patients had been seen individually versus the group delivery. Uh-huh. So that's kind of the clear time savings. But what about, you know, scheduling groups and getting people to come together in a group takes a lot more logistics to happen and scheduling. What kind of, you know, thoughts is your group having about that and how to take a look at that?
That's really important. And, you know, we have data. We had sites collect time data on those things, how much time they spent doing all the things, scheduling, notes, and all of that. So we had them collect that at some different time points. And so we'll be doing a budget impact analysis to see what that looks like. That's a great question. And my sense is that the efficiency of all those things improves over time, right? I think initially, well, one, there's just some initial time to get things set up. But even in a steady state, there's still some time with scheduling, et cetera. I think for site, there are some sites we work with that were just used to doing groups. And those are probably the ones that implemented in the more 3, 4, 5 month timeframe. They did this in their PT services for either a general musculoskeletal class or a prehab class. And so I think that this is just my sense, but that sites who have more experience with doing that, those things are there, but they're not as big of a time suck, right? That they kind of have their way of doing those things and it's a little bit more seamless. But it's a great question, and we certainly want to understand whether the time savings of the group outweighs some of the sort of additional logistical things. Part of that too is making sure you get enough people in a group. If you have a group of 2 people, it's not going to end up being a time savings, right? And so that's something I think that sites kind of ramp up over time.
Can you talk a little bit too about what you see in the future in terms of sustaining this? You talked about some of the obstacles, you know, you say there's clinician turnover and the effort, and, you know, I'm sure you're doing a lot of thinking about this and what you see in the future.
Yes. So We are thinking about that actively right now. A good number of sites are sustaining, and just anecdotally, we saw a higher number of sites sustain past 12 months if they were in our enhanced support arm. So we'll see how that goes over time and whether that seems like that was beneficial. But we're really, as I'm trying to think about how to help sites more with the expanding reach, particularly for a program like this that is largely built on efficiency. I mean, there's some other nice aspects to it. It's social support. The clinicians seem to enjoy doing this class. But in order for it to be something that the VA would want to invest in, it's got to be something that we're reaching enough veterans to make the efficiency efficient, right? So those are the main things we're thinking about, is watching to see what goes on with our current sites in terms of sustainment and reach, and then trying to think about our implementation support strategies that we used. We have a whole bunch of qualitative data. We have a whole bunch of experience from our facilitation calls, and I think learned some good lessons about how we can do this even a little better, and are trying to operationalize that. How do we help sites with particularly reach and sustainment?
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about what some of those lessons are, or advice you'd give to sites to get recruited? That's a question that we have.
Yeah. So, and I would say we're really just kind of getting into these data. I think we'll be able to look in a little bit more of a systematic way of sites that were the most successful, at least in terms of reach, and like, what was the secret sauce there? How did they differ? I think there's not one right answer to that. I do think, as I mentioned, there were some sites that were more used to delivering group programs and had some already built some referral pathways. So that's one. I think that is a key one. I mean, sites were generally able to, get things scheduled, get their the delivery of the clinical program itself. They did not seem to have huge barriers. Some sites would modify an exercise here or there, particularly if they were delivering over telehealth. Some of those can be a little bit more challenging. I really do think just the logistics of doing a group program. It's not the typical model, right? And so I think anytime you have a paradigm shift in terms of just the way the care is delivered, it just is a little sticky.
Yeah, definitely. Let me just give Bob Kearns an opportunity to, reflect and maybe ask some questions that he has as this relates to the Pain Management Collaboratory or some higher level policy issues.
Yeah, I'm not sure I have anything profound to say. I want to thank Kelly, terrific, not just for the presentation, all the work in this area. I'm compelled by the central importance of rehabilitation and physical therapy in particular for a large proportion of veterans with musculoskeletal pain and maybe knee OA and hip OA in particular. And, I go back to the right at the beginning about the challenges of building the workforce and the capacity to really provide this care. So I don't know that there's any simple solution, but I guess part of it is the extent to which people like you, Kelly, are in a position to have direct communication with, the people that are making decisions about positions, particularly, I guess, VISN and facility leadership in the VA setting, to advocate that this is, a big public health crisis for veterans, and we have solutions, but we need more physical therapy. How actively engaged are those folks in? Do they know about your work? What have they been engaged as partners? Other than Joel Skolton and people on the policy and practice side, what can we do? What can you do? What can we do to try to, enhance our advocacy? And I know Friedhelm's on, so I'm sure he'd want to speak to this too, but let me ask for your response.
Yeah, I mean, Shark Tank is an interesting experience. So we'll see how many, we've had some opportunity there to get this in front of medical center and VISN directors. One of the people we talked to is actually from our VISN. We got in the conversation about community care. So we didn't have any sites in our implementation trial that just said, okay, we're going to do group PT just for patients who were about to send, you know, telehealth for patients who are going to do community care. So we don't have data on like, oh, what are the cost savings there? But I think that's an opportunity, right? And maybe it's not the right option for every veteran, but I think particularly for a telehealth class, for certain veterans who would like that option, at least to try it, to start there with something that is delivered by the VA. And it could be in person too, but to kind of slot a group physical therapy program, potentially delivered telehealth at a VISN level, you know, think about how JeraFit does things. They're able to reach a lot of people. This is a little different. I think because of the nature of the program, we probably can't accommodate maybe the number per sessions that you can with JeraFit, but we work closely with the JeraFit group and have learned from them. But I think thinking about community care and how this could be not necessarily a substitute, but something in that pathway is, I know that's a little bit off of your question, but just to say, we've talked with one person within our VISN about that as a potential. So hopefully as we get these, now that we're finishing our trial and we'll have some results to share, we certainly want to share them beyond just the scientific literature. We have had good relationships with Joel Skolta and Mark Haverin, and they've been great about getting the word out over the PT listservs, and hopefully some of them will share it with their medical center directors and visit directors and such. So we're trying to make efforts there as best we can.
I'll just say, you know, the PMC is Pain Management Collaboratory, and the Coordinating Center stands as a willing partner around all of this. Mm-hmm. And as most people know, I think there are now 4 PT pragmatic trials within the collaboratory that have some PT focus. Really, it's more, they're all about pathways of care coordination and so forth, step care. So kind of synergy between the work that you've been doing all along and these other emerging pragmatic trials in this area, I think is a great opportunity.
Yeah, thanks, Bob.
It is. I also see that we have Dr. Friedhelm Sandbrink on the line. My apologies for not introducing you earlier, but this is our VA National Program Director for Pain Management, Director of Pain Management in the Department of Neurology at the Washington, D.C. VA Medical Center. And I just want to give him a minute or two to add some comments and reflections. Can you just unmute?
Can you hear me now? Is this
yes,
okay?
Yes, we can.
All right, very good. So thank you, Kelly, first of all, for presenting here and for your work. And I really want to thank all of the physical therapists that we work with from the pain side. I mean, you know, I think it's such a phenomenal resource that there are really concerns almost out there of how often we ask for PT because we understand the limitations, right? We I think many of us really feel like we would like to encourage our patients. We want to make it easier. We also need to realize that there are resource limitations going on, right? And so I think that question that came earlier and that you just referred to in particular about how can we do this remotely, virtually, in a group, you know, to some degree, we have obviously a number of veterans who just cannot make it to the facility, certainly not for repeated visits in weekly or, you know, every other week sequences, right? So we have to reach them remotely, and we have to be as efficient as possible. So again, I think, you know, telehealth groups in particular is probably that we need to maximize. It doesn't mean that can replace all of the in-person visits, but, you know, when they are suitable, when they are feasible, and when they maybe can be a start that makes an overall maybe reduces but doesn't eliminate the in-person visits, I think that's what probably we want to go through. And I feel like, again, we have a lot of physical therapists who are also integrated into pain clinics, and they really approach us from the pain neuroscience approach, you know, pain neuroscience education approach. So there are really a lot of newer ways also to strengthen, I think, in many ways, the patient's ability for self-care and for a better understanding of what they can do themselves. And I think those are often particularly, I think, suitable to also disseminate over telehealth. So thank you again, Kelly, for the work that you and all the other physical therapists do.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Allen, for sharing this important work. And we hope to have you back to hear more about how this work progresses. And it's extremely exciting for different ways of delivering physical therapy and for treating veterans with osteoarthritis. I'd like to thank our audience for attending today and writing in with some great questions. And we hope that we will see everybody at our next cyber seminar. You'll receive information about registering about the 15th of the month. So thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Just want to close the meeting. You'll be prompted with the survey form. Please take a few moments to fill that out. We really do count and appreciate your feedback. Have a great day.